What makes a good bet? At Virgin Bet, we think it's a simple bet, a responsible bet, a last-minute winner when you're down to 10 men kind of bet, with generous offers. A bet that puts sport first. Sound like your kind of bet? Then you're ready to get started. Sign up and get £20 in free bets when you bet £10 on sports. Virgin Bet, a good bet. New members. Min bet settled in first 14 days. 1.5 minimum odds. Free bets valid 7 days on sports. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Bet responsibly. 18 plus. Gamblerware.org.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Drop in the Gloves. Thanks for joining us today. Midway through January. It's getting balmy. Tim, how you doing there in North Carolina?
I'm doing good. It's been cold, but not as cold as Michigan, I'm sure. How you doing?
I'm good. It's getting very cold next week. Single digits. And I stopped doing fires in the house this weekend, and I haven't gotten back to it. And so now I'm just hemorrhaging money, I'm guessing, at that house because the temperatures plummet during the night. To the point where my wife even asked me, she's like, are you still doing the fires over there? I'm like, oh, I forgot, because I got a bunch of wood delivered and he piled it up right in front of my pile so I can't get to it easily. And usually I back the van right in front of the pile and throw the wood in the back of the van and drive it over to the new house. So there's no good way to get wood over there. So it's frustrating. But I stacked all the wood last night up until 10:30, 11 o'clock stacking wood. And it's funny, let me just say this, because I had this conversation with my wife the other day. It's funny how routines dictate your life. And this is a life lesson for everybody. And listen up. I'll let you get a pen. Okay. Last year, I had a terrible routine at night. I would put the kids to bed and I would just lay down, lounge on my phone and just veg. You know, I'm like, I need a break. I need a break. Ever since this house build, Tim, I don't have time for that. So I'll put the kids to bed, or I won't even be there to put them to bed, and I'll just go to the house and work, running electrical, doing mechanical, painting, drywall, whatever it may, not painting, not yet, but just there's tons of stuff to do. And I found I got into that rhythm and that routine of just doing stuff. And then I finished up my electrical work, and I had this week off where I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a little break from the house before I start, you know, putting my manifolds together and getting the boiler room set up with pumps and expansion tanks and this and that. And it's like 8 o'clock and I put the kids down. I'm like, well, what do I do? What do I do? I'm just sitting there. I'm getting antsy. And so I put my stuff on. I go outside. I stack wood. I need to do something now. And it's funny how literally a couple months you can change your whole mindset on life. And take it for what it's worth. But it doesn't take much to change who you are. Life lessons here at Drop in the Gloves.
It's a good lesson. It's one of the things too that sleeping is. It's hard to prioritize because you're not doing anything. But it's just as important, if not more so, as like good diet, good exercise, the routine, all the stuff you're talking about. And you feel like to do those things, you need to be doing something.
Yeah.
And so going to bed early and sleeping in or whatever, like having that good routine, feels like you're not doing something. So it always gets deprioritized. But it really, really is so important. So it's good that it's working for you.
I know. Gosh, if we had a sponsor right now, this would lead in perfectly to some kind of to wellness thing, but we don't.
My pillow.
Yeah, right. But it is neat to kind of change, but it can easily slip back into the negative. So take it for what it's worth. But yeah, I'm like a antsy cat, like an antsy in my pantsy. Now, once the kids go to bed, I got to do something. So I just start looking around the house like, oh, what can I do here? So,
you know, you should do is read my book. You haven't read it yet, have you? Like, been 2 years now.
Don't take this the wrong way. I read the first page and I was like, okay, this is, I got into it. And I did not get back into it.
Yeah.
So I need to sit down and prioritize that. Yeah, that's on my, what's it called again? Into the Woods?
In Plain Sight. And you can find more information on timwurzberger.com.
How is that website going
a long time?
No.
How's it? I mean, the book sales have dropped off. I sold a few hundred copies, maybe like over 400 in the first 6 months or so. And now it just trickles in randomly, a couple here and there. Nothing crazy.
Nothing to know. Mine are similar. I gave up on book sales years and years ago. Do not buy my book. I don't like it. Speaking of that, my movie update, we have some movement, Tim. I talked to Mitch Albom yesterday, and he's got a meeting with the big movie exec. It was supposed to be yesterday because of the wildfires. It got pushed till tomorrow. And he's like, and he's not a very like optimistic guy. Like he doesn't give you any hope. He's just very realistic. He's like, this is going to be the one. I got a good feeling about this. They're talking directors, they're talking this and that. So I'm very kind of excited to see where this goes. We'll see.
That's great. But
yeah. Stay tuned. But anyways, I had an eventful last weekend. We haven't talked in a while. We did the Tim Hunter interview. So I had a funny encounter. Tim, have you ever heard of the term Karen?
Of course. Yeah.
So it's just a well-known label of usually a woman, typically a white know-it-all woman. I'm doing the race card here, but that's kind of how it is, who just gets just upset over the most mundane, strange things. Well, I had my kids' music recital this weekend. Beautiful, right? You go there, the kids are singing, there's kids playing piano, there's kids playing instruments, there was a lady playing the harp. It's beautiful. Absolutely, like nothing can go wrong. Everybody's there, your family. It's a beautiful night. Well, not one woman. She had a bee in her bonnet, and I could tell from the instant the recital started, Tim. I had all five of my older girls singing in the recital. They've been working hard on it for the last month, 2 months, like getting the notes. It's a very intricate song that they were singing. They sang a couple, 3, 4, 5 songs. Anyways, there was a whole, you know, program of people doing their stuff. So I'm sitting in the back row because we have Esther, Eleanor, and Marie, our three youngest with us. I usually take Esther and Eleanor, and Danielle has Marie because she's got to take care of her. If she needs to eat, she, you know, milky, milky time. Anyways, every time Marie coos or caws or just like makes a noise, this woman does this. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see what I'm doing. She does this, you know, and she's sitting right behind me. And
looking over
her shoulder, paint the picture for the listeners, Tim. Very good. She looks over her shoulder, half cocked. And I can tell I'm like, this lady upset. And then she keeps doing it. And Marie makes a noise every 5 minutes, but it's nothing. She's not crying. She's not screaming. It's more of like a cute little baby noise. And I can tell this lady's getting worked up. Like she's starting to like, she's visibly upset where she's like, her brows are furrowing. She's looking, she's staring around at people. And it got to the point, and this is like, we're an hour into this now, this recital, maybe 40 minutes. So it's getting close to the end. She stands up. And mind you, my wife and I are like 5-6 chairs apart because we had all the kids between us. She's in the corner. I'm on the aisle. She comes up and stands in the middle of the aisle. And I see this. I'm like, what the hell is this lady doing? And Danielle at this time, just serendipitously, whatever the word is, she starts nursing Marie. And so this lady that kind of like stunted her big, bold action, she was going to go and confront my wife, and like get after her. And so Danielle's nursing Marie, and I see this, and I'm fuming. Steam is coming out of my ears. But this woman is 70 years old. You know what I mean? So what do you do in this situation? So I get up, and I go around her. And I stand between her and my wife, and I have Esther and my other kid who's like 2. And so I start bouncing Esther on my knee. She's not making any noise, but she's just like there. And this woman is still losing her mind because Marie comes up for air every once in a while and like makes noise. And this lady starts trying to get around me. And I go, just go sit down. Enjoy the concert. Go sit down. And she's like, it's not fair. And I'm like, I'm sorry. She's a baby. Like, just please go sit down and enjoy it. And that was it. That was the initial confrontation. She stands there, Tim. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes. She's standing right beside me, gripping the seat in front of me, in front of her. And then Marie makes a squawk, like an actual squawk, like cries and cries, probably for like 10 seconds. And she tries to get through me. And then I said, no. No, go sit down, enjoy the concert. And she gets her finger right in my face. I drove 200 miles to see this. And I go, I don't care. It's a baby and you're putting yourself in the cry zone. So why don't you go up front and enjoy the concert? And she's just losing it. I can tell. And I feel bad because she's an old woman. And finally, she just stood and she gave up. And as she's walking away, she goes, like saying loudly, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. And I'm just like, holy hell, lady, like over a couple squawks from a baby. And she went and sat down in her seat. And then I saw her the next night because there was a funeral at our church and we knew the woman who passed away and she was there. So in my mind, like, is this like woman's sister who came in for the funeral? And I just like ruined the concert that she had to do by now. I don't know. It was just all these things going on, but what an ordeal. It was, I don't know, maybe I'm making it bigger than it made out to be, but it was just crazy that she was just like that worked up. And then she made it worse by getting closer to the noise. It's like, you just go closer to the concert.
Yeah, it's her fault in as much as that, like, she starts to focus on that, and that's all she can focus on. She doesn't hear the music anymore. She can't even see the kids with her eyes, even though she's looking at them. Like, all her attention and focus is just channeled toward your little baby making goo goo gaga sound, which is, that's her fault. You know what I mean? And this is a children's choir concert, right? Like a recital type of thing. Like, this is full of families of kids of all ages.
I know, and there was plenty of noises going around.
It's not like you let the baby run around screaming and crying at the funeral. Like that would have been on you. But this is ridiculous. It's way overreaction on her part. And it's weird to think about, like, if you hadn't gotten in the way, not that she would have done anything, but how might it have escalated if she had gotten in Danielle's face?
Well, I think about that. She would have gotten her face, and then it would have really set me off. Or if it was like a younger woman, how I would have reacted differently. I think I would have told her off. I don't know. Maybe not. But it got me thinking, Tim. Maybe that's just a norm from her time. Maybe in her day, children, and my wife's grandparents said this all the time to their kids, children are meant to be seen, not heard. So be quiet. If a baby's squawking, you get her out of there. We don't want to hear that stuff. And how times progress, and now it's accepted. It's like, that's the norm now. Kids are crying. Babies are crying. Kids are talking, interjecting, just interrupting your parents all the time. That's the norm that people have gotten used to. And it got me thinking, how does this apply to the NHL? Because I bitch and moan about it all the time. Oh, you millennials, all you young kids, you're soft, this and that. And then sure enough, the very next day, the Toronto Maple Leafs had a huge loss to the Vancouver Canucks. Not a huge loss, but a very demoralizing loss to this team who was playing so well. They lose 3-0 in a lackluster game. And it just so happens that their coach, who was brought in to kind of right the ship, instill some authority on this team, some accountability. He comes in and he has this quote after the game, which is a very normal quote for a coach to say. He says, quote unquote, "I didn't think we had enough pace in the game or played with enough energy. You need more life and energy. I did not think we had that tonight." Very mundane quote, you know, but calling the team to the table saying, "Hey, let's go. We need to be better." And then Chris Tanev, one of the guys they brought into last year, the veteran guy, he gets it. Old school guy, blocking shot, you know, hitting, doing the things most guys don't want to do. He says, you know, it's not good enough. They outworked us. They outcompeted us. That's why they won. Okay, that makes sense. Coach, check, says the right thing. New defenseman, check. Leader in the locker room, says the right thing, check. And then it gets to old Mitchie Marner. And this guy never disappoints. He always comes through in the clutch. Whenever I start to think he's changed and he's turned the corner, playing really good defensively, you know, contract year, going to get it, he gives this nugget. And I'm sure you've all heard it. He said, someone asked, how did you guys think you played? What did you think of your game? And he goes, "I liked it. I thought we played well. I really did. The last couple of games, we've been giving up plays to teams that aren't missing on them." What the hell? Like, it's just, how further apart could we be from coach to player from those two messages? Craig Berube, we stunk. We were outworked. We were outpaced. We didn't have any energy. Vancouver dominated us. Chris Tanev, outcompeted. We had no reason to be in that game. That's why they won. We were not a good team. Mitch Marner, oh no, we played good. Yeah, they just had a couple chances and they buried them. That's it. But other than that, we played solid. Like, if we keep playing this way, look out. How is there that much disconnect between player and coach and player and teammate? And it just got me thinking, is this the new normal? Is this a world where everything is just good? Everything is awesome. Everything is cool. I don't know the rest. It's a Lego movie. But is this it, where we can't have accountability? We can't, like, is Mitch Marner just, is this the norm? Tim, you're in this world. You're a young kid. Tell me, am I missing something?
No, this is a topic we've covered quite a bit, I think. And like you said, Marner never disappoints. It's like he can't get out of his own way. And he's his own worst enemy when it comes to stuff like this, because I don't know if, I mean, I'm assuming he didn't hear what Berube and Tan have said. These interviews are happening simultaneously. They're happening one after another. It's a busy, loud room. So it's not like he's disagreeing with what's been said before him.
But to interject, that's important because he's giving his true feelings and right. He isn't swayed by what the coach is saying. So that fact is very important.
Yeah, that's my point. It's like his mindset is just so automatically different from an older player, an older blue-nosed, tough guy who leads the league in block shots and hits or whatever. And then Craig Berube is about as an old school coach as it gets. And you have Mitch Marner, and he's just become the poster boy for this younger, skilled, talented. And I hate dumping on him all the time and calling him soft this and this and that. But it's just like at every turn, he just gives you more reason to dig in with this opinion. And this quote just leans right into that.
And okay, this guy doesn't have to be nails. He doesn't have to lead the league in hits. He doesn't have to go barreling into the corners. We're not calling him soft by his play on the ice. He is a playmaker. He is a goal scorer. He is a first line guy. I don't need him doing these things. What we're talking about is his mentality, how he approaches the game. If it's 2 minutes left and you need a play to be made, do you think you can trust Mitch Marner to make that play? Do you think he is invested enough in the team to succeed? When I look at a quote like this from Mitch Marner, I don't think he is. I don't think he has that mentality to do what it takes to win when we need you to do it the most, in the most important times. Can you see someone like Nathan MacKinnon having this comment? Can you see someone like Steven Stamkos saying this after a lackluster performance, saying, oh, you know, we played pretty well. I really do think we played good. You got outshot. You lost 3-0. You were constantly in your own zone. Yeah, you know, got to give it up to them. They scored their chances. There is an obvious just difference between him and guys who get it, guys who are champions.
Whether you're screaming from the stands or the sofa, Virgin Bet has even more for you to shout about this season, because we're giving you a totally free bet builder on a selected football match every week this season. So get ready to make some noise. Join us and claim your bet builder free bet every week. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Use bet builder free bet on selected match by kickoff. Min odds evens. Max one free bet, £1 to £20. Except via pop-up. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Bet responsibly. Gamblerware.org.
It's guys who will go that extra mile to win. And I don't think he has it. I just think it's ingrained in him. And there are a lot of guys like him nowadays. This was not a thing 20 years ago. And I'm not saying this to be the old fuddy-duddy. This is something much like a routine, much like a habit. This has been ingrained in him since he was a child. Oh, you had a good game. No, you're good. Everything's fine. Next game, we'll get him. No, it wasn't your fault you guys lost. It was the other team. They were just hitting their spots. No. You were -4. Not your fault. It just said, let's move on. You're good. You're good. You're good. Everything's fine. Let's play the next game. You're the best. No problems. Is your feelings hurt? Okay, let's go for ice cream. It's not your fault. We lost. It's fine. Next year. It's just this constant patting on the back and reassuring. And this is what you end up with, which isn't bad. He's a confident kid. He's obviously, you know, he's got his head screwed on straight. I just think he's been just not brainwashed, but this is how he grew up. And this is what you get. He is never wrong. The team is never bad. It's always somebody else's fault. We'll get him next time. Bud, you've won one playoff series in 10 years and you just had it. Like, it's kind of interesting to see. It really is. In contrast to a guy, Chris Tanev and Craig Berube, who are a little more old school. Blue nose. As you say, I don't know what that means. There's blue collar.
Blue collar, hard-nosed.
Yeah, but anyways, it's just interesting.
Talk about this next example, too, because I think this is a similar vein in a similar conversation, but it seems like a little bit of an extreme the other way, where the old generation, I feel like, is a little bit out of touch or kind of exposed for not quite being... There's a middle ground that needs to be found here. It's not just the old school is right and the new school is weak or soft.
Tell no, 100%. And that's why coming into this episode, I wasn't sure where I was going to fall, because I'm the one who came up with this idea, old versus new, because I'm constantly battling this with my kids, with the culture, with hockey, with everything. And it came to the forefront with my Chicago Blackhawks. Connor Bedard, they're playing in the Winter Classic, and all the alumni come out, all the heavy alumni for the Blackhawks. I did not get that call, but Denny Savard was there. Chris Chelios was there. Jeremy Romanek was there. I'm sure Ed Belford was there. All the big guys. And they're on the ice. Everybody's doing the, you know, the shaking the hands, kissing the babies, and they're with the players. And apparently, Jeremy Roenick was upset with Connor Bedard. And he says this: there needs to be respect in the game, and there needs to be respect for the history of the game. There's one player that didn't come up to me, Chelly or Savvy, and that was a superstar of the Chicago Blackhawks. That's Connor Bedard. And he's referencing how all the guys came over and said hello and gave him a little nucks and said whatever. He's upset that Bedard did not come over and pay homage, kiss the ring of Jeremy Roenick. And this is where I fall on, I think, the kid's side. Who are you, first of all? And second of all, why does he have to do that? I'm sure you've had interactions with them before. And yeah, maybe he was busy. Connor Bedard doesn't strike me as a disrespectful kid. He doesn't strike me as a kid who's just like thinks he's better than everybody. Kid is super humble, super respectful. And in this instance, I just think this is JR trying to pump up his new podcast or show with Tim Peel, because he's doing a show with that disgraced ref, Tim Peel. And I think he's just kind of trying to get eyes on his show, because this is stupid. Like, this is just so incredibly childish by Jeremy Roenick. He didn't touch my hand. And I wanted him to come over and touch my hand. That would make me feel better. Is it like, I'm on Bedard's side here. I think it's stupid.
Yeah, I am too. And it's definitely like a clashing of generations. Jeremy Roenick is 54 years old. Connor Bedard is 19. He's 19.
Imagine, Tim, sorry to cut you off again. Imagine caring that much if a 19-year-old doesn't come over and touch your hand. Imagine that. Irking you to the point where you go out publicly, and he knows his platform, and just says he doesn't get it. He does. There's no respect in the game from this guy. I'm like, are you nuts, Jeremy Roenick? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I feel like every sitcom does this scenario where, like, the guy returns to like a high school reunion or the college football team who was a star on 20 years ago, yeah. And then he thinks he's going to be the man, and then no one even knows who he is. Now, this is not to disrespect Roenick. Like, he's a legend. Of course Bedard knows who he is. Like you said, he's a respectful kid. He's 19 years old. The eyes of the whole, you know, state region are on him. He's playing this outdoor game on New Year's Eve. His team is losing. Like, he's focused. It's game day. So, yeah, I think this is a big old nothing burger, and it's Roenick just looking for attention.
But I think it does speak to a little bit of a change, because I do feel like, if Roenick was the kid, he would go up and dab like Makita or Esposito or those types of players. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, this is Roenick just reaching. And he's a great, like, I know Jeremy. I saw him for Chelly's retirement, and he's great. And I've been around him plenty of times. He's a good dude. I just think he's doing this to kind of pump up his show. I do. I maybe I'm wrong. But then it gets me thinking, am I the Jeremy Roenick in the Trevor Zegras situation? Because I have been very vocal about my, you know, thoughts on Trevor Zegras and the Michigan and the alley-oop goal. And I think I've come a little bit to the dark side of, you know, it's a hockey play, whatever. When he first did it, I think my exact words were, I would break his wrist if he tried to do it. But I think I'm getting a little more soft, Tim, in my old age. It's one of these things where, back in the old days, the first guy who raised the puck, I think people tried to hang him. They said, we don't raise the puck in this game. And then maybe the first guy who, you know, did a deke or did this and that, and there was up in arms, or the first guy who did a backdoor tapping, or the first guy who did anything regarding a celebration. It got me thinking how mad Don Cherry got at Alex Ovechkin and his celebrations just jumping in the glass. And how things have progressed, and the celebrations, and on McDavid and Bedard, and all these guys have their elaborate celebrations. Is it time that we just let go? Or has it always been this way? And now when Zegras and Bedard and Celebrini and all these guys get older, they'll chirp the young guys. And it's just a rite of passage for you know, the old guys to complain about the young guys, and then the young guys get older and it just wash, rinse, and repeat. I think that's what happens.
Yeah, it is. It's a natural cycle here. And there's like there's always a forward progress. The game changes, the culture changes, the personalities change. And I think it is a rite of passage that you have to like talk about what it was like when you came into the league and how it never would fly these days. But you go back to like the older generation would talk about how easy and soft the league was in 2009 when you came in. You know, and it's just perspective. And I don't think I would read too much into this, but the fact that it keeps coming up both on our show and just in general hockey Discord means that there's something there for sure.
Yeah, I think the game has changed more in the last 15 years than it did in the first 100.
Yeah.
Just the mentality of the game and the way it's played. Yeah, you know, equipment, players stronger, faster, whatever. Just, and it's happening in all the other sports too. You know, basketball's changed more in the last 10 years. Football's changed the way you played. Ground and pound gone. Now it's the air raid. Basketball's a three-point line. Hockey is run and gun, no hitting. Let's go, let's score goals. So I think you're seeing it across the board in the sporting world. And it's, you know, takes time to adjust. Everybody thinks their era was the best. When you go, the 80s were the best, the 90s were the best, this and that. So, I don't know. Anything else on this, Tim, before we move on?
No, and I think we can even almost skip over this next topic, but we'll talk about it just because it was quite a buzz for about 24, 48 hours last week, and I know you want to bring it up, so let's get into it.
Well, when there's smoke, there's fire.
Mm.
And in Boston, there is some issue, reported issues, and the guy reporting it has doubled down.
Yeah.
He's saying, no, there is issues. I can't think of his name offhand.
It's Rich Keefe.
Rich Keefe saying... There is issues in the locker room between David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand, the captain of the team and the best player on the team. Pasta doesn't want to play with Marchand. There's issues. Marchand can't keep up, this and that and the other. They tried to squash it. They tried to do little things to kind of stem the fire, but it's not working. What's going on in Boston, Tim? Are you concerned with the Bruins?
No, I tweeted this out. The Boston Bruins have a lot of problems, but the relationship between Marchand and Pastrnak is not one of them.
I got 99 problems.
Yeah, this is not one. I mean, it's like, yeah, and Rich Keefe is someone who has broken stories before in the last couple of years where he's got a report, he's got a source that no one else had, or he had it sooner than no one else had. So I don't want to dismiss it entirely, but the fact that the players were so over the top outspoken, Pasta's like, yeah, we laughed about this and that no one takes it seriously, and it went away just as quickly as it came. So
yeah,
no, I don't think there's something here, and like I said, this is not to defend Boston. There's a lot wrong with this team, but I don't think that's a real story between those two.
Again, this is, I don't want to go back to the last little old versus new. This would never happen. Like the new days of just bad blood being leaked into the press or getting out, it's amazing how often it happens, whether it's trade grudges, players asking for a trade, issues in the locker room, Pettersson, Miller, Pasta, Marchand, guys wanting to get traded. That was never. And maybe, well, obviously it's the internet and news travels fast. And so maybe there was leaks, but they stayed, you know, to their local spots. But yeah, it's just funny. Now there's just, it's always something going on in the NHL. There's always some guy bitching and moaning. It's great. All right. Speaking of breaking news, Evgeny Malkin's house was broken into on Saturday during the Penguins game versus the Senators. And guess what? The person stole his 3 Stanley Cup rings. Is this an issue? Because you see it in football. You see it in other sports where it's obvious the players are out of town. So criminals see this and they go, okay, when the cat's away, the mice will play, and they rob him. And it's becoming more and more prominent. What would you do, Tim, if you were going away and you were a professional athlete making millions and millions and millions of dollars? What would you do? How would you protect yourself? And your family's at home. Julia's at home with Levi.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it sucks for Malkin, right? Like those are some of the most prized possession he has, yeah. And it sucks that like I've never had my home burgled, but anyone that has, and anything I've read about is like you feel so exposed, knowing when someone was in there. Looking through your stuff, taking your things when you're not there. It's a very vulnerable and not safe feeling. And even for millionaires, like, and, you know, the more you have to lose. So it sucks for him to lose this stuff. And I guess it got me wondering about like what maybe this is something you can't speak to, maybe you can't, but like how seriously do players take home security or their privacy on like not letting people know where they live, locking up valuables? I know a lot of them live in like gated communities, but how high security is that really? You know, so I don't know. What did you see from just your time around players like that?
Oh, nobody cared. It wasn't a thing. I think this is a new phenomenon where players getting broken in. It's just it's old versus new. No one broke in these houses. Nobody. And this is a stone cold fact. If you live in Traverse City and you see one of my two vans anywhere in the city, keys are in the front seat, bud. Take them. I don't lock my van and I put the keys right in the cup holder in the front. It's there. If you want a Nissan NV or a Toyota Sienna, go for it. My house is usually always open. The only reason we lock it is so the kids can't escape during the day. It's the only reason why we lock it. But yeah, I don't know. Listen, if they're breaking into Patrick Mahomes' house and these high-end NFL quarterbacks, there's nothing you can do. Aside from hiring a personal security detail, I don't know how you would... I don't know how you'd stop it. People are just...
It's crappy. It feels like a matter of time until something happens while someone's home. And mm-hmm. you get into a fight or someone gets hurt, like the Biz thing, obviously different story, but like all of a sudden we're watching footage or hearing stories or seeing black eyes of like well-known players who tried that got, you know, beat up or beat whoever up. Yeah. So it's only a matter of time.
Did you say black eyes or black guys?
Black eyes.
Oh man. You got to really pronunciate that. Cause that could black get us guys. Some big time hot water. I was like, where's he going with this? You're seeing black guys. I was like, holy moly, pimp. Heads up.
Black eyes. Yeah.
There we go. Okay.
Bruises, all that stuff. So yeah, it feels like a matter of time before we hear that story and someone gets hurt.
It's unfortunate. People will prey on the vulnerable. And when you listen, you're a millionaire, you're out of town. People are going to see that. All right. Let's a couple more quick hits before we get out of here. Detroit. Finding their footing, Tim, under Todd McClellan. They're 7-2. But what makes this very, very good? So they went 7-1 and they just lost their last game 6-3 to the San Jose Sharks. And talk about old school versus new school and a team responding to a little bit of an iron fist, a little bit of accountability. He went after Justin Hall, who is not a very good defender, but, you know, making his way through the NHL, good for him. And this is right after the game. Todd McClellan said this: I'm not going to sit up here and BS for him. He had a terrible night and that's just the way it is. Well, sending a message, he sent a message himself. I think it's pretty obvious, so whether he got on in the last 5 minutes or not, it really doesn't matter. He knows he can play better, and I'm telling you before I'm going to tell him, but I'm going to tell him that tomorrow, and that's up for him to fix it. I know he's a better player than that. We'll see what we can do. So it's a great little motivation from a coach to a player. He's calling him out publicly. He's going to talk to him privately, but he does add that at the end. He's a better player than that, and we'll see if he can fix this. I like that. Call him out saying, you played crappy. Let's go. Move along. You think Lalonde would have done that? No. Lalonde would have been, well, we played great the last 2 weeks. We've been playing really solid. It's just a hiccup. We'll get back to our game. McClellan's like, no, we need to address this. Hall was crappy, terrible, turnovers, this, that, and the other. He needs to be better. But I know he can get better. But will he? I don't know. It's up to him. I like that.
Yeah, and there's such a distinct little line there that really makes a difference when you're in a leadership position like a coach is and you're demanding more from your players or your teammates or the people on your team, whatever, is not just saying, hey, you played terribly, you need to play better, because that might be the message. But if you frame it in the way that like, hey, you're better than this, let's get you back to that level that I know you can be at. It just the little subtle differences in how the sentence is structured changes the whole dynamic and how the player hopefully he responds to it. So we'll see if this does anything for Hall. Not that he was that good to begin with, but certainly needs to be better.
But he plays, you know, he's in the NHL. He's playing 15 minutes a night. It's nice to hear that. It gives you that motivation and that surety that your coach believes in you. Because that's a big thing as a player. You always are wondering how you fit in the coach's plan, what they think about you. Do they want you to be like, there's just always that unknown, even the top guys. So those little nuggets, They're really, really helpful. I remember the biggest thing for all the players, for me especially, was pregame skate, because the coach would skate around and he would grab guys and talk to them. And you always watched, and every player watched. And I'm like, why is he not talking to me? What's going on? Because he would grab guys and pull them aside and have a little chat and this and that. And when he did grab you and talk to you, it felt so good. It was just like, yeah, okay, I exist. I'm here for you. So I know that's nice for McClellan. He's starting to figure it out. And he did say, this is what he said about, you know, Detroit getting back into the playoff hunt. He said, all we've done is crawl back into the race. We've got a lot more work to do. Love that. Good for him. Good for Detroit. Hopefully this can continue. But like you said, they got a lot of work to do. There's a lot of games to be played, good and bad for them. All right, moving on again. Tristan Jarry for the Pittsburgh Penguins, Tim. Placed on waivers again for the second time this season. Tried to work his way back into the lineup, doing everything he can. Kyle Dubas finally said, nah, it ain't working, bud. Sorry. You know, you're playing. We're giving you ice time. It's just not happening. His record isn't terrible. I think he's 8-8, but his underlying numbers are terrible. Goals against above 3, save percentage sub-8, sub-9, I mean. So he's just not playing great. Not that any of the other Penguins goalies are playing that much better, but he's making $5-something million. So he's getting sent down to Wilkes-Barre. I don't think we'll see him again in a Pittsburgh Penguins uniform unless there's an injury. But what's going on with Tristan? What happened to him, Tim?
Yeah, it feels like the Jack Campbell thing, where all of a sudden he just starts playing really poorly, and just you're just not giving a team a chance to win. And this stat was floating around Twitter yesterday. He's played 22 games this season for the Penguins. He allowed a goal on the first shot 6 times in 22 games. On the second shot, 4 times. And you go down the list, he made it only to shot 6 without allowing a goal 6 times in 22 games, which means
that's amazing.
16 out of 22, they might have 2 goals in the first 10 shots. Like it's just crazy, and it just takes the wind out of your team. And it's not just a number, but it's also like the earliness of the game. Like going down early, allowing a goal early is not good. So yeah, it sucks that for the Penguins, who are fighting a really tight playoff race. I hope we see him back. I feel like he's been really good at times in his career, but it also would just be equally as believable if he never plays again. And this is just the beginning of the end for him.
To me, that screams mental. Like he just is mentally, he's physically ready for the game, but he's scared and he's nervous. And he knows if he gives up a puck, it's going to spiral, and you can't play goalie that way. You got to be confident. You got to be challenging shooters, you know, out beyond the crease. And to me, he's just nervous going into the game. Oh, don't let in a goal, and you're going to let in a goal. Like on the first shot.
Yeah.
Six times, 4 times on the second shot, 2 on the third, 4th on the fourth, 3 on the fifth. That's almost 75% of his games he's given up a goal in the first 6 shots. That's insane. Like, that's incredible. That 6 shots, you get that within the first 10 minutes, typically. That's a big set. Did you see speaking of shots, did you see the Sabres, first team in NHL history to score a goal in a period without getting a shot? It's pretty incredible. Yeah. Last game versus the Carolina Hurricanes, they get an empty net goal because Bernsey tomahawks McLeod on a breakaway when there's no goalie, and he gets the goal. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I did see that. The next one here, Taylor Hall, a little not so great quote from him. He said he will likely be traded. Obviously, he's on the Blackhawks. He would be open to signing an extension, but, quote, has a feeling that's not really in the cards. He said, I came into this year wanting to be a Blackhawk for years to come. I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore. He's not played well. How much that has to do with him versus just the roster around him is up for conversation. But I don't even know how much he helps your team get better or what value he has at this point.
A former number one overall pick, MVP, the Hart Trophy winner. So he does have value. But his time in Chicago has been just, well, mired by injuries in the first year. Played 10 games, just out the rest of the season. This year, a healthy scratch at one point, I believe, or threatened to be a healthy scratch. Dash 17, 22 points. Hasn't really clicked. Brought in to be like Connor Bedard's sidekick. Mentor him. That role has gone to Nick Foligno, who is 50 years old. So it hasn't really worked out for Taylor Hall, and he gets it. Like he's been traded. Like he knows the writing's on the wall. This isn't a shocking quote. So he's going to be dealt. What they get for him, I don't know. I have no idea. I thought it was a mistake when they re-upped him, or they didn't re-up him. They didn't trade him. So anyways, they'll get a second rounder for him. He'll be valuable third line piece for a team that wants some depth scoring. So, but yeah, his value, they thought Mip would be a first rounder when they could, you know, deal him, but he's been had just a failure of a tenure in Chicago. All right. Speaking of Chicago, Connor Bedard got to 100 points, Tim. Did it pretty quick. Who do you lap?
Yeah, he did it in 112 games, which is the exact same number as Austin Matthews. It is in fewer games than Nathan MacKinnon, but he had 143. Jack Hughes, 160. So he's doing something really special. And I feel like it would be a worthwhile segment or episode to dive in a little bit deeper on Bedard and compare like his line mates in his first 100 games to some of the others on this list.
Yeah.
And some of them started on bad teams. Almost all of them did, right? The first overall picks, but others were like putting into pretty good situations just an off year. They had talented guys around them and they could turn it around much more quickly than what we're seeing from the Blackhawks. So you got a feel for the kid. He was interviewed after that game and just wanted nothing to do with it. Doesn't really care about that. He just wants to win games and he's not doing that right now.
It's interesting to see the difference between him and Celebrini. Because they're getting the same points. Their teams are at the same spot in the standings. You know, the San Jose will be in a lottery pick this year. Potentially, probably. San Jose seems to be an upbeat team.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to be trending in the right direction, even though they're the exact same spot as Chicago in their rebuild. The exact same spot. They got some good young prospects. Chicago, everybody just looks and feels like it's just miserable. Bedard's not happy. The players are pissed. There doesn't seem to be any optimism within the franchise. And I don't know why. I guess the expectations were a little bit higher this year. Boy, oh boy, that poor kid, Connor Bedard. Honestly, I feel bad. He's a world-class talent. I think you nailed it on the head. That would be an interesting little segment to do. Who is he playing with? And where are they now? Like, his line mates are in the East Coast, some of them probably. It was a bad, bad first year and a half for his career.
Yeah, you kind of want like a class coming up together, almost like they're a freshman class, right? And they're the same age and they can hang out together and they can and challenge and push each other. And you don't really have that. Like Crosby had that, McKinnon had that, like Matthews had that, Jack Hughes has that. You don't have that yet with Bedard. Not that there aren't talented players around him and some young ones that could develop into that role, but he's on an island right now, all his own.
Yeah, the one player I think, when you look at their lineup, I think Frank Nazer is the one guy who will be there long-term. But Bertuzzi, Raikko, Foligno, Teravainen, Dickinson, Makeyev, Maroon, Donato, and Hall. Easily, you could say that they could all be gone next year. Like, right? Maybe Teravainen signed a little long-term deal, but it wouldn't be far-fetched to say this roster could completely turn over in 3 years, with the exception of Bedard and Nazar. The defense is a little different story. I think their defense is on the right track. I really am impressed by what they're doing on the back end, so... It's the forward group that are just, they got to figure that out. But anyways, I think that's it, Tim. Anything else from you?
No, that's it. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening.
Oh, whoa. Are you throwing us out? All right. You got to say cheers, Tim.
No, I'm just trying. Back to you.
All right, everybody. We do appreciate you. We'll be back next week and have a good weekend. Cheers, everybody.
Whether you're screaming from the stands or the sofa, Virgin Bet has even more for you to shout about this season. Because we're giving you a totally free bet builder on a selected football match every week this season. So get ready to make some noise. Join us and claim your bet builder free bet every week. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Use bet builder free bet on selected match by kickoff. Min odds evens. Max one free bet, £1 to £20. Except via pop-up. T's and C's apply. 18+. Bet responsibly. Gamblerware.org.